You're listening to the Membership Geeks Podcast, bringing you proven practical tips and advice from the leading experts on growing a successful membership business.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to this episode of the Membership Geeks Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Morrison, chief geek around these parts, and I'm so glad that you're spending part of your day with me. If this is your first time listening, welcome to the show. You are in the place to be for proven practical tips and advice on launching and growing a successful, meaningful membership business. And if you enjoy what you hear, be sure to hit the subscribe or follow button in your podcast app to ensure that you do not miss a single installment. And I'd encourage you to dive into the archives. Pretty much every single episode that we have here, we're up to 393, I think this is now. Every episode pretty much is evergreen. The stuff I talked about back in 2015 is still as relevant and applies today in much the same way as it did back then. So there's a lot of gold in those archives. Enjoy the binge. If you've been with us for a while, thank you as ever for your continued support. I love and appreciate you, and I'm so grateful for every second of your time and attention that you give to the Membership Geeks and the Academy and all the great stuff we do. All right, today we're talking membership growth. This is going to be a little bit of a stream of consciousness one for me, because the biggest problem that I tend to see when people are thinking about how large can they grow, how fast will they grow, how much money can they make, how many members can they have, the biggest problem is expectations are usually wildly off. People get very carried away, and it is extremely easy to get carried away or to do the opposite. People underestimate their potential, underestimate how far they could go with their membership, and maybe they use that to discourage them from starting a membership in the first place. So I just wanted to kind of share some thoughts around setting realistic expectations and staying grounded while also not almost becoming insecure about, you know, what the growth of your membership could look like. So it's very, very important when you're trying to estimate or envision the growth of your membership, the growth rate, where you could get to and how fast you'll get there. It's very important to not overlook past performance. Past performance is pretty much the only hard evidence that you have about what growth looks like within your membership. Now, if you're just starting a membership site and you're trying to estimate or predict growth, then obviously it can be difficult to do that from a standing start. You can't look at, you know, how has the membership grown and scaled over the last 6 to 12 months when you don't have a membership. But you can look at other aspects of your business. Look at the size of your audience. How many people are on your email list? You know, if you've only been able to grow your email list by 50 subscribers over the last 12 months, then it's a little bit of a leap to think that you might be able to grow a membership that's going to have 50,000 subscribers in its first year. There's a disconnect between what you've actually been able to achieve with something and what you're hoping to achieve with the new thing. So look at the past performance. What has your growth rate been like? What have sales been like, whether it's sales of a membership or sales of other similarly positioned products or services that you might offer within your business? How effective have you been? How much have you grown your following? Even if it's just on social media. Now, your social media following is very rarely a good indicator of anything, because there's so many other factors involved there that will not factor in to the growth of a product like a membership. And also, it's very low commitment to follow someone on Instagram versus pay them $50 a month to teach you something, right? But if that's all you've got to go at, then that at least is something to look at. Again, if you are sitting at 20 Instagram followers, and that's a number that's not changed in a long time, but you've been putting a lot of effort into it, then again, you need to kind of look at, okay, well, if I can't grow something that's fairly easy to grow and fairly, you know, low commitment for people to follow me on, then what's the likelihood I'm going to get 100,000 subscribers to my membership in the first month? And I'm being deliberately over the top with those kind of growth estimates, but people do get carried away. They do think like that. You know, we'll see people in the Facebook group saying, I want to start a membership. I need to get to 50,000 members in my first year. How do I do that? And so the first answer is, okay, have you got to 50,000 anything in what you're doing? If you have, you know, if you've got 10 million subscribers on your email list, then 50,000 subscribers to a membership is not going to be too unrealistic. If you've got 10 subscribers on your email list, then 50,000 is just pie in the sky stuff. So you need to look at past performance. How effective you've been at growing anything, at compelling your audience to do what you want them to do. And if you have a membership up and running, what have your sales been like? What's the growth rate been like? What's your churn been like? Look at that data and factor it in to your thinking about what the next 12 months, 24 months, 5 years might look like on that trajectory. And if you're predicting that it will scale up exponentially, that yes, okay, it's been a little bit slow and steady initially, but it's going to skyrocket, then again, what is going to be the difference maker? What are you going to do different that you're so confident about that you've not done in the last 12 months of your membership? What are you going to do with your membership that is so much more effective to grow that you haven't already done to grow your email list or your Instagram followers, or to sell your coaching services, or to sell your personal training classes, right? So look at past performance and make sure that you're tempering expectations for your membership to be consistent with what you've already proven that you're able to do. Now, it's not hard and fast. It doesn't mean that just because you've successfully done one thing, you'll be successful with your membership, but at least it's grounded in something that is evidence-based, right? Something that actually is rooted in things you've been able to achieve. It's really important as well that you have a realistic assessment of what you're working with right now. How big is your audience now? How big is your email list, your social media following? How well do the ads that you run convert? How well does the landing pages convert? How much traffic do you get to your website? You need to really take stock. And I think at any point where you're embarking on a big push for change, a big push for growth, or you're starting a new membership, that audit, that stock take is really important. You need to know what you're working with. If you are setting huge growth goals, if you want to get thousands and thousands of members, but you don't have an email list, or you have 100 or 200 people on your email list, then that's something you're going to have to grow before the next thing happens, right? You need to grow your audience before you can grow the portion of your audience who become members. If you've only got a reach of 1,000 people, and you're looking to get 10,000 members, where the heck are the other 9,000 coming from? Now, it might not involve audience growth. It might not involve running ads. It might not involve growing that email list. But you need to be able to answer the question, okay, so, you know, obviously what we're working with now doesn't equate to the goal that we have. So what is going to plug the gap? What is going to make the difference? And that's why, again, you need to be realistic with the resources that you can invest as well. Do you have money to invest in advertising to amplify and accelerate the components that are going to fuel the growth of your membership? Do you have manpower? Do you have time? You need to be realistic about this. If you can't reverse engineer the result that you're shooting for and draw that line all the way back to the resources you have right now without there being a question mark along the way, right? If it's not kind of like, okay, well, we'll find a way of growing our email list from 500 to 500,000, and that is where we'll get our members, you know, we'll get 50,000 members from. You're missing quite an important piece of the puzzle there. And going through these mental exercises, actually going through the practicalities and realistically assessing the components the resources, what you're working with right now, that can just help deflate any overinflated expectations, any overinflated goals, to ground them a bit more in reality, because you're thinking about the actual reality, the actual logistics, what is real, what you can show, what you can prove right now. What you do tend to find when people set big, hairy, audacious goals, and by the way, it's not a bad thing to have big, hairy, audacious goals, as long as you have a big, hairy, audacious plan to achieve them. But quite often, when people envision these obscenely phenomenal results, they're kind of hoping that there'll be some monumental breakthrough. There'll be some spark that lights a touch paper that skyrockets everything. But I'm a big believer in the philosophy that was used by Sir David Brailsford behind the GB cycling team here in the UK. I don't know anything about cycling. I don't follow it, but I like business. And Sir David Brailsford, as a strategist, applied really smart strategy there, and also is now involved in my beloved Manchester United. I'm just prepared to lose a whole bunch of my UK listeners. I'm a big Manchester United fan. David Brailsford's part of the team that's coming in there, and he's popularized the notion of marginal gains, the law of marginal gains, where it's all about those little refinements, those small improvements to gain just an inch, just a little bit, to just nudge the different needles a little bit in the right direction, and to see the positive results happen as an accumulation of these small, incremental, gradual gains that are achieved over time. Because you are more likely to make small, incremental improvements over a span of time. You're far more likely to make those small incremental improvements than to achieve a monumental breakthrough. And yet a lot of people in business, a lot of people in the world, a lot of people trying to achieve great things, put all of their effort into chasing the monumental breakthrough. Landing that big interview on the Huge Influencers podcast that's going to expose them to a massive audience, and that's where their success is going to come from, rather than doing a greater number of interviews with lesser known influencers who have smaller audiences and getting those incremental gains, those marginal gains of that little bit of exposure, but spread across a lot of different small pockets of people, rather than going for that moonshot. You are far more likely to make those incremental improvements than those monumental breakthroughs. And so, again, you need to factor that into your expectation, because that can take time. That takes a bit of work. It's a little more gradual. It's slow and steady wins the race. It's the tortoise or the turtle versus the hare. Think about the law of marginal gains when you're setting your expectations, particularly when it comes to the time frame over which you can see growth, but also the things you're banking on, the things you're betting on to fuel your growth. If it was easy to land that moonshot, everybody would do it. Everyone wants to do it. Everyone tries to do it. Everyone thinks, man, if only I could do this, if only I could do that. Let me tell you something. I did the same thing very early on with it was membership guys back then. Like when we were kind of fighting to carve out our place in this industry. When we started in 2015, nobody else was talking about memberships. And so we had that little strategic advantage in that we were a lone voice in this world. However, very quickly, there was someone come into the market who had a lot of big connections with a lot of big influencers, had a huge army of affiliates, a lot of money to put into Facebook ads. And all of a sudden, all these huge names in the industry who obviously were affiliating for a particular product, all of a sudden, those interview spots, those opportunities were going elsewhere. And those opportunities at the time seemed so far removed from what we'd be able to achieve, because we were still kind of building relationships and still carving our place. And so, honestly, we kind of fell into that place where, you know, we were looking for that moonshot. If we can just get on this person's podcast, that'll really, really strap the rocket to our back. And don't get me wrong, we were doing well. We were growing really well. Our audience was expanding, well, thanks largely in part to this podcast and our Facebook group at talkmemberships.com if you want to go to our free Facebook group. But there was still that kind of, okay, like if we could just land this interview, if I could just get a speaking gig on this stage. And that's actually something that, you know, we strategically pursued. Built relationships with key influencers within the online business space, got onto a lot of podcasts, got a lot of big names onto this podcast. And a lot quicker than I expected, I got onto big stages at big events. I spoke at Tropical Think Tank, hosted by Chris Ducker, shared the stage with legends like Carrie Wilkerson, like Peter Shankman. And, you know, this is a stage where people like Lewis Howes and Pat Flynn have spoken on in the past, and Amy Porterfield spoken on that stage. It was a high profile event, and it did a lot, but it wasn't the rocket on the back. Social Media Marketing World, the biggest conference for social media marketing and one of the biggest conferences in online business. I ended up speaking there, sharing a stage with Amy Porterfield. I love Amy. Amy's a huge, huge name in online business, very influential. Amy Porterfield sitting there on a panel with her and with Shailene Johnson as well. Again, very big name. Didn't move the needle. Didn't move the needle at all. And, you know, it had benefits and it helps with credibility for other things, but this is all just emphasize the point that kind of banking on the moonshot, it really, really pays off. It very rarely pays off. Focusing instead on those incremental improvements, those marginal gains, and centering your expectations around those is actually where true growth comes from. And that's really where the next phase of growth for ourselves came from, is not chasing these things that we identified as opportunities to change the game, because they're extremely rare to come by. And even when you do, they very rarely pay off in the way that you think they would. Now, I'm certainly still glad about the things I was able to do. And again, they definitely have big benefits, but they weren't the game changers that I think a lot of people would have thought. And there's a lot of people I know would have given their right arm for some of the opportunities and some of the exposure that we got early in the game. But you know what? That's not what fueled our success. That's not why we are where we are today. So think about that law of marginal gains. Think about the likelihood that it's going to be slow and steady. It's about moving the needle across a lot of different areas and just gaining inch by inch by inch. Ditch the idea of that big game changer that's going to give you that hockey stick kind of growth. It's so incredibly rare. You need to account for the time it takes for things to actually eventuate into an outcome. Consider the time lag between your marketing efforts and tangible results. You know, if you're running a promotional campaign, it doesn't mean you're going to get an immediate surge in signups. It takes time for your audience to become aware, to consider whether the time is right, consider whether the product's right, and then finally commit to joining your membership. Things like content marketing very rarely have an instant payoff. Again, it's about building a body of work and getting that flywheel in motion that might take months or even years to start paying off. Same goes for things like improving member retention rate. Strategies for retention can take a while to start moving the needle in a noticeable way. So there's always going to be a lag between the input and the output. Very, very rare that you get instant improvement. So once again, when setting your expectations, factor that in. Account for the time that things will take. Break the process down. And make sure you're accounting for failure too. Success will typically come off the back of repeated failure and repeated expectation. So you're going to have to do a lot of things that you think are going to fuel growth that end up falling flat. That's just the way it goes. You need to accept that's a reality and factor in a high failure rate into your expectations. This again is why it's better to focus on the law of marginal gains than it is to, you know, look for that one big game changer. Because more often than not, the stuff you try will fail. It's just business. That is just the way things go. Ask any seasoned entrepreneur and they will tell you that any success they've had is built on the back of a big old pile of failure. So you need to account for that. You need to account for the fact that some of the things that you're thinking might move the needle won't. They simply won't. It's just a reality. So again, set your expectations. Expect to fail. You can also look to benchmarks and standards and kind of typical statistics within the online membership world as a little bit of a guidance, a little bit of additional information to consider when you're trying to think about how fast you might grow, how big you might grow, how much your revenue might get to, where your churn rate should be, what's achievable. There's not a lot of a wealth of information out there about online memberships in particular, because ultimately it's still a fairly small-ish niche. It's a relatively cottage industry. A lot of memberships are, you know, thriving, but compared to other types of business models, it is still a fairly small corner of the world. And so there's nowhere near as much data about industry benchmarks as you might find for software companies or broader subscription businesses. Now, we attempt to combat that with our regular online membership industry report that we conduct every couple of years. There is a new one that is being produced this year, so keep an eye out for that. But in the meantime, you can download the 2022 version of the report and get benchmarks on everything from growth rate, revenue, churn rate, through to, you know, the logistics of how people are running their membership, the size of their teams, the industries they're in, their biggest challenges, the most effective marketing channels, all of that stuff you can get by going to membershipbenchmarks.com. Membershipbenchmarks.com. That'll take you to our free online membership industry report. You can get that downloaded. And again, this information can help you to temper your expectations and just add a little bit of reality into the thought process. Because, as I've said a few times, people get carried away. And a big part of the reason people get carried away is they think about potential. They think about the larger potential rather than the actual reality. And probably the biggest mistake people make with that is they look at the size of the overall market as a reflection of the size of the overall opportunity. You see this a lot. Anyone who watches Shark Tank in the USA or Canada or Australia, or anyone who watches Dragon's Den in the UK, that's the UK's version because we don't really have sharks, but, well, we don't really have dragons either. But, you know, dragons are a thing, were a thing in the UK in a lot of the old stories and stuff. But you see that a lot on those shows, where people come in and they don't really have a business yet, or they maybe have started it and they've not got much revenue or much traction, but they are valuing their company at millions based on the size of the overall market. And it's such a rookie fundamental mistake to think that, well, you know, I've just started a travel website. The travel industry is worth $10 trillion. And so my valuation of $10 million for my website is reasonable because of how big the market is. And it's just not the way it works. It's not the way it works because, you know, there's nothing to say or to prove that you're going to capture any of that market. And you're certainly not going to capture all of it. You can't boil the ocean. You can carve out a little part of it for yourself. But people get real carried away with that. And this is where you get spreadsheet billionaires from. It's really easy to be a spreadsheet billionaire. Anybody can do it. But that doesn't mean that that'll translate to reality. So when you're setting even your biggest, hairiest, most audacious goals, please don't look at overall market. If you have a membership where you're teaching people how to play drums, don't go and Google the size of the drumming market. That's not bad information to have, but if you do have that, don't go into the spreadsheet and look, well, hey, there's 30 million drummers in the USA alone. So, you know, if they all joined my $20 a month membership, then that would be a lot of money. Not the way to do it. You need to prove what portion of that market, what portion of that opportunity you're going to be able to tap into. That's the only thing that matters in terms of market size. Size of overall market tells you absolutely nothing. So don't make that Shark Tank mistake of confusing market size with opportunity size and with reality. You should also think about external factors too. These need to weigh in to your expectations. Is your niche tied to seasonal trends? You know, so for instance, fitness memberships might see a spike at the beginning of the year due to New Year's resolutions. But that's not going to be indicative of what the following months are going to be like. So again, if you're sitting down working out your goals for 2024, 2025, or whenever you're listening to this episode, and it's January, and you've got a bunch of people who are joining your personal training, your yoga membership, and you're thinking, okay, so this month we got 2,000 signups. So if we continue on this path every month this year, then that's, 24,000 signups this year. You're not factoring in the trends, you're not factoring in those external factors, and so your expectations are way off. Because of course, the January spike is not going to be a good basis for predicting the future. So again, make sure that you are aware of and you understand external influences. That'll help you set realistic growth expectations that align with your market's natural rhythm. I'd also encourage you to think about what people call diseconomies of scale. Now, one of the most basic economic principles is something called economies of scale, whereby you would expect that the costs involved in producing a product will decrease on a per unit basis because of the advantages you gain from becoming larger. So the bigger you get, the more able you are to buy the materials for your products in bulk. When you do that, you get discounts. When you are bigger, when you're producing and creating more things, then it's more efficient to have your plant machinery that is actually constructing stuff. It's more efficient to have those running continuously. You can get more out of them versus, having machines sitting there that aren't actually being used to produce anything for half of the day because the demand's just not there because you're not that big yet. So that's economies of scale, essentially. I'm not an economist. I have studied economics as part of my educational journey, but I'm not an economist. And if you are, don't balk at my simplistic explanation of what economies of scale are. It's basically just the bigger you get, the more likely you are for things to either be cheaper to buy in bulk or more efficient to produce in bulk. Economies of scale. That applies when you're producing a product, a tangible product. That's probably the place you see the most economies of scale. But an intangible product like an online membership typically won't have these advantages. And these economies of scale, but they can certainly have diseconomies of scale. So these would be things like the cost of growing your team as your member base gets bigger. There's more activity to manage, more customer service issues and so on. In the early days, you could probably just do this all yourself. When you're getting up to hundreds of members, you can probably bring one person in who can take care of both the extra workload in the community and customer service. But when you're getting up to thousands, tens of thousands of members, you're going to need more staff just to handle the increased workload that comes from having a larger member base. As your membership grows, as your brand grows, you're getting more website traffic, you're probably going to need more expensive servers. The longer your membership is running, the larger your database is going to become because you'll have 5 years, 10 years, 15 years worth of transaction and subscription and member activity data that still needs to be stored. That is all in your ever-increasing database. And so, again, more efficient servers, better quality hosts with better quality database optimization, that's going to be needed too. More users on your membership platform. So if you're using something like Kajabi or Simplero, where it's a hosted platform, the more users you have, the more likely it is you're going to need to upgrade that plan for your membership platform. Your email marketing service, most of them, the more subscribers in your list, the higher the cost is. So while a lot of typical, more traditional businesses will benefit from economies of scale as they grow larger, That doesn't happen for memberships. You will see that the costs of just maintaining and running your membership day to day will go up as they grow. That means fewer resources for investing in other things. It means maybe less time. You know, you might not actually hire people to handle the extra workload, but if you decide that you're going to do it all yourself, that means you've got less time to actually grow your member base any further. So even with these diseconomies of scale, the increased cost, the increased resources needed to support a growing membership that so many membership owners don't think about, they don't think about the actual logistical impact of their membership achieving growth. Even with those diseconomies of scale, memberships will typically still be a high profit margin model for most people, unless you're spending a boatload of cash on advertising, which again, you might need to start to do once your marketing efforts need to expand outside of that smaller group of superfans. In your early days, you might be able to get to 1,000 members by tapping into the people already on your email list, already in your audience, but your marketing will have to change once you need to step outside of the people you already have in that audience. Once you need to find new ways of accelerating audience growth, that's when you might need to start paying for ads. It's when you might need to, you know, pay to go to events to make connections to get on higher profile podcasts and stuff like that. But regardless of the fact that, you know, there's still a lot of margin to play with, people do overlook this. They get so carried away with dreaming of their huge growth that they don't think about what that growth actually will result in terms of increased cost, increased workload, and the depletion of resources that they might be assuming would still be readily available to fuel that growth. So you need to factor this into your expectations too. So really, this is all just kind of a call for some common sense, a call to stay grounded, a call to gather as much information as you're able to from things that exist, things that are real, things that can be proven, rather than getting carried away with trying to predict the future, getting carried away with excitement about the potential, about the audience size, the overall market size, about, you know, doing the math when you look at what someone else is achieving and the numbers they have, and you see that, okay, someone else could do it, so I could do that too. There's nothing wrong with being ambitious. There's nothing wrong with having the big, hairy, audacious goal, but it needs to be rooted in reality. You need to be realistic about things. You need to be measured. You need to recognize that memberships are a marathon and not a sprint. They're not the type of business model that typically see that hockey stick kind of growth. Memberships are all about those marginal gains. Slow and steady wins the race. And you know what? That's actually good, because so often, the absolute worst thing that could ever happen to somebody is if they achieve the goals they set for themselves. Because if you're sitting there with a membership that's got 50 members right now, and you're wishing you had 10,000 members, actually, do you know what a membership with 10,000 members looks like? How many people on a team is required to facilitate that, and what that means for your role? You're not going to be able to do a lot of the things that you're currently doing right now if suddenly you've got to overlook a team of 20 people who are running your membership of 10,000 members and the various things that come out of that. What your day would actually look like if you got what you wanted. How that would change the dynamic of your community. How you'd need to do things different. The new things you need to pay for. The new stresses. What your day looks like. You become a manager of people as opposed to someone who's in there intermingling with your community. So again, as I said, this is all kind of stream of consciousness, thoughts and opinion and advice and things that I've seen along the way, both for ourselves, both amongst the students that we have in Membership Academy, with clients who work with in the past. Just try not to get too carried away with your expectations for your membership growth. Do your best to look at past performance, to be realistic about what you're actually working with and how that aligns with your goals, with your expectations, to take into account industry benchmarks, to not get too carried away, to think about any external factors, and to really, really consider the unsexy side of growth, what growth entails, what it results in, and how that might change the trajectory of your business. Anyway, that is it from me for this week. I do hope this has been useful, informative, insightful. I'd love to hear from you on your thoughts on this episode. Has it changed your mindset? Has it brought you back down to earth? Has it made you smile because you've been in that place where, you know, you went down the spreadsheet billionaire route and then the reality proved to be very different? I would love to hear any feedback you have. Hit me up on social media at Membership Geeks on all social channels, or you can jump into our free Facebook group at talkmemberships.com. So just type in talkmemberships to your browser, it'll redirect you to our free group. Or if you're on Facebook already, just search for Membership Mastermind and you will find that group. There's about 20,000 membership owners in there. And I'd love to hear from you on your thoughts on this episode. And of course, if you want to leave some feedback and a nice shiny 5-star review in your podcast app, then I always love reading reviews. I appreciate them. I read each and every single one. And if you do leave a review, be sure to let me know on social too, so I can thank you for that. I am out of here. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I'll be back again very soon with another installment of the Membership Geeks Podcast. Bye for now. If you enjoyed this week's episode of the Membership Geeks Podcast, we invite you to check out membershipacademy.com. Membership Academy is the original membership about memberships, and it's the essential resource for anyone at any stage of starting, growing, and running a successful online membership business. Whether you're still trying to figure out what your idea is going to be and you need some help making it a reality, or whether your website is already up and running and you're looking for ways to grow and attract new members, then Membership Academy can help you to get to the next level. Not only do you get access to our step-by-step membership roadmap, our extensive training library, and exclusive member-only discount and tools, you'll also become part of our supportive, active community of membership owners that will help you along the way in your journey with feedback, encouragement, and advice. All of this and more make Membership Academy the number one place to be for anyone looking to start, manage, and grow a successful membership business. Check it out and join the community at membershipacademy.com.